the blame, but it's only paper. Self put the blame on everything. Money is the blame, but it's only paper. Self put the blame on everything. The more you try, the more you lose. Well, apparently I'm not out of the maelstrom yet with all this interference, so I had to switch to another system to start the program today. I was introducing to you Ozo Matli from Los Angeles with their song It's Only Paper. This is from their 2010 album, Fire Away. More bad news in terms of hurricanes. We have the island of Dominica really taking a beating today. The prime minister saying that there is nothing left to lose. Everything has been basically blown away and destroyed. It's a sad, sad situation there. And then the storm has moved on to Puerto Rico in its sights. And we'll see how that goes, but it's not good news. It's a Category 5 storm, and it's returning again. It's on course to return to Puerto Rico for yet another bruising. So we'll see later on today how that is shaping up. But please send out your good thoughts to the people of Puerto Rico and the rest of the Caribbean. The question is whether after Puerto Rico, where does this storm go? All we could do is hope for the best and then assess after things happen or don't happen. But it's a very bad situation now. Life is great for ex-President Barack Obama, fresh from an extended vacation. He seems to be adjusting well to his new life as a recently minted, self-branded, multimillionaire entrepreneur. And his wife, Michelle, as you know, is racking up multi-million dollar contracts on her end with high-paying engagements and deals of her own. A top priority now, Obama says, is getting the Barack Obama Presidential Center up and running, up and constructed and then running, on Chicago's south side. And, of course, to have that happen, he's deep into concentrating on raising the money to capitalize the $500 million center. Also, he says millions more will be needed to fund a range of programs the center will be running. Naturally, Charles Ortel's ears have perked up, having exposed the Clinton Foundation as the largest unprosecuted fraud in U.S. history. The Wall Street banker-turned-financial investigator began looking into the Obama Project. Today, he's with us to discuss some explosive findings as they pertain to the Obama Project. And with that, Charles, thanks for being with us today. I know you've been very, very, very busy, but I know you have some explosive news to share with us today.
Well, thank you, Yatrice, for having me on. Indeed. I sort of landed on this question of presidential foundations by accident. I didn't start out as somebody who wanted to spend this much time understanding how they actually work, but as you and your listeners know, when I spent the time, and as I'm spending the time on the Clinton Foundation, I actually began looking at other foundations, the various, the Carter Foundation, he's got several actually, and the Reagan and the Bush, Elder Bush and Younger Bush. And so, you know, I think in 2017, the first question most people who like books might ask is why exactly do we need to build another gigantic building that needs to be heated and cooled and insured and on which, in theory, you might pay taxes and then maintained in an age where so many records are electronic? And does it really make sense in the first place to, as you mentioned, spend $500 million, half a billion dollars for yet another structure in Chicago? And believe it or not, that question was thought through way back when. The Presidential Libraries Act first came together, I believe, in 1955, and then in 1986 it was amended. And it was tightened up because the people who put the lawmakers who thought about, you know, the wisdom of whether each president, each successive president should have a monument to his, and ultimately someday her name, wondered whether these things were really going to be places where scholars would study what happened, or are they going to be secret clubhouses where partisans of one former president or another would band together and try to install some kind of Clintonism or Bushism or now Obamaism as a sort of a doctrine of reverence. So people thought this through very carefully, and the original idea was not to have this kind of, unclear what its real purpose is sort of institution, which the Clinton Foundation is. The idea was to actually have a place where the records that are created during the tenure of a president that are actually owned by we the people, a place where those records could be stored and made accessible to the future generations of scholars who wanted to consider what may have actually happened during a given president's tenure. That's what these are supposed to be. Now, these animals are unique, or I should say they're a special class of charities. Charities have various rules, both federal, state, and foreign rules they have to follow. But with regard to presidential libraries, there are two statutes. There's one that I mentioned, the Presidential Libraries Act, that tells you what a library is. And then there's one called the Presidential Records Act, which of 1978, which cleared up the question of what is a presidential record. And that question became a question in the Nixon period, when people tried to argue that some of what Nixon produced when he was president was his personal property, not the property of we the people. So the Presidential Records Act clarifies that, even looks forward to the age of electronic communication. So it's crystal clear under the charity law that if you want to create a charity to house presidential records in a presidential archive, you must comply with a large body of law. Now, the challenge with these foundations is that when they are established while a given president is still president, then the political apparatus around that president, the attorney general, the head of the IRS, the various functionaries, may or may not give the application the type of tough scrutiny that it deserves. And in the case, sadly, of the Barack Obama Foundation, my contention in an article and in an interview that I've given, which has so far resulted in one article with Jerome Corsi, and there will be other forthcoming articles, I explain that and I'm not a lawyer, but I've had lawyers look at it, that the Articles of Incorporation of the Barack Obama Foundation, I don't think comply with the letter of the law. I think they create an entity that is indistinct, whose purposes have not been sufficiently limited to be specific as they need to be to get federal tax exemption. So I contend, and I will continue to contend, that the original Articles of Incorporation and the date this thing was incorporated, I believe in 2014 in Washington, D.C., I don't think that it complied with federal law appropriately. And I think
Does the Obama application or the papers filed to get this foundation started, did it look in any way familiar to you, as in the same thing that was done at the Clinton Foundation?
Well, in some ways, it's actually worse than the Clinton Foundation. I mean, in the Clinton Foundation, You have to set forth in your articles of incorporation to get federal tax exemption your primary purpose. You can't say, you know, I'm going to do good things. That doesn't qualify. And if you're going to be a presidential archive, most of the, I think virtually all the preceding ones that were going to be presidential archives specifically state right up front, our purpose is to comply with 44 USC, whatever the section is, 2101, I forget exactly what it is. And they lay it all out. They're very specific in the Articles of Incorporation. And typically there's an, and we want to have a research facility to study these national, these presidential records. The Obama, in the Articles of Incorporation, the Obama Foundation does not make that specific claim. Now, there actually are memos and tutorials that the IRS, at great expense to all of us, puts up online and updates. And they explain that, generally speaking, you know, when people create these nonprofit corporations in the 50 states or in Washington, D.C., they can not really appreciate the strict rules that apply. So they create something that might qualify as a nonprofit corporation, but certainly will not qualify to get federal tax exemption for the donors who want to give money to it and give the entity the right to accumulate the difference between its revenues and expenses, if that's a positive notional profit, without paying federal tax. In order to get those privileges, you have to limit your purposes, and you actually have to accomplish them. So my contention is that on the organization date, initially, when it was organized in Washington, D.C., technically it shouldn't have received federal approval to be a tax-exempt organization. And then, but nonetheless, you know, in this period, we have to remember that this is, I believe, following, or no, I think it's around the time Lois Lerner may still have been head of the tax-exempt organization at this time. I may have the timing slightly off, but I think that I have it off. Actually, she left, I believe, in 2013. But the fact that Lois Lerner's group, which ran this decision that whether or not to give something federal tax exemption, had targeted conservatives, that didn't become known, I don't think, till 2015. So it's a kind of a contentious thing. Instead of complying, I think it's with the Second Amendment, equal protection under the law. To operate the decision making apparatus of the IRS to favor one group and oppose another group, that should be offensive to all of us, whatever our political persuasions may be.
But what I am getting is that this is headed down the same road as the Clinton Foundation.
Oh, absolutely.
And many other foundations that say in the incorporation papers that they're going to do something. They're going to, you know, the Clintons continually refer to the purpose of their organization as doing good works. And that phrase, that nebulous phrase, is good enough to implement a whole bunch of things that they did not get permission to do, like raise hundreds of millions of dollars, directing money to places that were never identified by the IRS or for the IRS, and to begin to do things that they would never have been authorized to do. When you have Barack Obama saying that he's going to build a center, but we've been hearing about all these different projects that he's been working on and that he obviously will be funding. So we start off with a problem. Who's in charge now of sending the papers back saying, be more specific?
Well, at present, the IRS is still controlled by Obama-era holdovers, both at the top in John Koskinen and in the tax-exempt organizations department, which I think is the key department. It's Obama-era holdovers. So we don't yet have a transition within the IRS to people who might be, let's hope, at least neutral. And, you know, beyond the level of who's on top, the IRS is a large organization. It's had a long time to insert people into these departments who may or may not be neutral, who may or may not be partisan. So, you know, there's a period of time here where it's going to take people to attempt to correct the mistake. But I, you know, will be arguing, and I've started to argue, I think the existing foundation will have to be wound up. I don't think there's any way to fix it at this point, because what he did, or what the trustees did, it wasn't as simply as bad as just setting the thing up in Washington, D.C., and getting submitting a deeply flawed application to the IRS that shouldn't have been approved but was approved. It gets more complicated because in 2014, to solicit, which they did do in a large number of states, I believe in 2014 they claimed that they had to, that they were soliciting in 37 out of the 50 states. I submit that each of the registrations in all those 37 states were wrong. And then going forward to 2015, for some strange reason in 2015, which I would, on this one, I'm pretty much a stickler on this type of stuff, but on this one, I think what happened, I hope, was it was just sloppiness, that they didn't copy down the list of all the states that they needed to file on their master federal tax form. But when you look at the filing for 2015, for some strange reason, they claim, whereas they need to file this report in 37 states and Washington, D.C. in 14, they claim it's, I think, more like, you know, 15 or 16 states and Washington, D.C., leaving out a whole bunch of other ones. And it would have stood to reason that in 15 they would be soliciting in more places rather than fewer places. So their existing paperwork, just on whether or not, you know, it was simply going to be a presidential museum and archive out in Chicago, just for that bit of paperwork, they have major league problems. But now where they're in big trouble, I think, is some bright bulb, and I'm saying this sarcastically, decided it would be really transformational and novel to suggest in a press release and in different interviews that this Barack Obama Foundation is going to be so brilliant, it's actually not going to house any physical records. Well, you know, that doesn't comply with the law. I mean, the law doesn't say that a presidential archive is going to hold some of the records. You got to hold all of the records. And at the time that this private entity, which it is currently, makes a donation of whatever it is going to donate to the National Archives, it can only do so if, at the time of the donation, it is validly organized and at all times validly operate in compliance with state, federal, and foreign law. And I submit already that's not the case. So I wonder how they can actually, even if they raise this money you're talking about, Yatrice, the $500 million, how can they turn the thing over to the National Archives and execute a validly constructed joint use and operating agreement? This is exactly the problem that the Clinton Foundation has been trying to cover up ever since November 18th, 2004, when I argued they defrauded the National Archives and we the people. So, you know,
That was no small amount of money. That was tremendous money. That was a lot of money. So what I'm seeing here is the pattern reestablishing itself. The Obama, President Obama, I should say, tearing a page from the Clinton Foundation book and beginning to implement the same crooked system that it says it's going to do something, which is not specific enough. It doesn't say where it will be doing this. You know, since leaving office, Barack Obama has visited at least 9 countries. And it's not just to say hello. It's about getting money. He is in furious fundraising mode.
Right.
So let's kind of share with the listening audience, because you've done the research and you figured out, the last time we talked about the business methodology here, hiding behind a 501c3, that is a nonprofit organization, a designation which would permit it to raise funds. This is the Clinton Foundation. The Clinton Foundation went all over the place doing all kinds of things, getting involved in health care, distributing bogus drugs, doing all kinds of crazy things under the idea that they were performing good works. And nobody ever challenged that vague description of the purpose of the Clinton Foundation. We see an exact duplicate in the Barack Obama Foundation, where even before the thing is even capitalized and built, we see major room for fraud.
Sure, sure. So the ingredients of this start with the following. The first thing you do, as you mentioned, is you create a legal structure that is very vague. It appears to give you latitude to do whatever you want to do. The next step is to get trustees who are just lackeys and who don't understand or don't care to understand or don't believe they have to understand their solemn duties under the law. Trustees, this is called a public charity, i.e. it's a body that stands in the shoes of our government. So it's supposed to be independent. It can't be partisan. It can't be a vehicle for enrichment. It can't be operated to create more than, quote, an insubstantial collective private benefit, which means, has been interpreted in certain cases to be, you know, if you create collectively for the all outside the charity more than $1,000 of private benefit, that has been held to be in violation, and it just guts the charity, and the charity is presented with a tax bill. It's not a charity; it's a corporation. So the second step is to attract trustees who are not independent. And you look through the roster of trustees, these are close personal allies, you know, of the Barack Obama team. Then the third sad step is to select an accounting firm that, while, you know, it may be interesting and it's historically quite important, actually, it's not up to the task when you have, I believe, the one they had retained for the first two, in quotes, audits, is a firm that has less than 20 total employees. Now, that's okay if you're just going to be a library in Chicago and that's it, and you're not going to be soliciting in every state, and you're not going to be operating around the world, and you're not going to take over some other initiatives, which we'll get to in a second. Maybe that could work. But, you know, the selection of this auditing firm, to me, is highly suspicious. It would need to be replaced. I think they've already issued two bad audits, in my opinion, on this entity. And
they themselves have been the objects of bad reviews as a firm.
Right. And so you get to this, others have called it the Clinton blur. And here we have, I think, the same idea, the Obama blur. I mean, we give in this country and around the world former presidents a lot of deference. And so in the case of Bill Clinton, deference he does not deserve, in my opinion. But nonetheless, deference is given. That means that when he travels around the world, I doubt he's strip searched. I doubt, you know, that his plane is really that carefully checked. And fraudsters understand that. So if you want to get stuff moved around the planet on the president's plane, what better way to do it than to curry favor with a former president? If you're going to have trustees who are looking the other way, trustees who may be politically connected, trustees who may believe that, who knows, maybe Michelle's going to run for president. So now's a good time to score some cash, lay it away for that rainy day in 2019 and 20, or maybe it's 23 and 24. When people need to campaign again and consultants need to be paid again. So, you know, this Clinton blur, I'm afraid, it's actually saddening to see. I had hoped that Barack Obama, whose administration was certainly less scandal-played than Bill Clinton's was, you know, might set up be a model for doing things the right way as opposed to simply emulating a crooked crime family, which is the Clinton crooked crime family. I mean, the thing that most recently is so upsetting is that while he was president, Barack Obama championed something called My Brother's Keeper, which sounds like a nice, noble idea of having older people mentor at-risk youth inside and outside this country. I mean, it sounds like a good idea if you can trust everybody. And our government, I believe, funded that initiative. And then, in theory, this became an independent charity, My Brother's Keeper. But so far, the Obama Foundation has not provided, and I haven't seen yet, doesn't mean they don't exist, but I have not seen records that show that My Brother's Keeper itself was validly organized, operated, and filed the right paperwork. But recently, a press release was issued stating that the Barack Obama Foundation somehow, magically, had taken this thing over, and that it would be liquidated and be run henceforward around the world by the Barack Obama Foundation. Well, where's the paperwork on all that? The Articles of Incorporation don't say that this entity, the Barack Obama Foundation, can control international operations that of this type. And, you know, so that looks to be a very big problem. And then yesterday we learned that Barack Obama is out on a speaking trail and may have charged $400,000 per speech. Now, I don't know how many of you remember this. I remember it because it was very alarming to me that Barack Obama and associates in his administration, when they were thinking about, in quotes, reforming the pension situation and the retirement asset situation, Barack Obama and his key people were quoted as saying that nobody really needs to earn more than $200,000 a year. And, you know, we think about that comment, and I disagree with that. But beyond that, how does the person who said that or something like that justify a $400,000 speaking fee for probably less than an hour? I mean, that to me, I don't mind, you know, people overpaying for things. But I think when you have a politically powerful family and somebody whose wife may change her mind and decide to run for president and may actually win, you know, when you start accepting compensation that is so far above what really would be arm's-length compensation if you weren't politically connected, and I don't accept the argument that any speech payments to any former president, including Reagan, you know, are ones that should be things that we believe are set a precedent. I mean, lots of people are paid money to give speeches. Lots of famous, powerful people are paid money to give speeches. Very few people make $400,000 for a speech. And, you know, as Bernie Sanders said about Hillary, that must have been some speech. I mean, you know, what did Obama say?
Well, look, so far in the last couple of minutes that you've been speaking, I did a mental check, that we have two more examples of parallels between the Obama 501c3 operations and the Clinton 501c3 operations. Number one, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not allowed as a 501c3 organization, a nonprofit organization, to acquire another operation.
Well, no, let me stop you on that one. You are allowed to do it, but the rules are very strict.
But when I say they're not allowed to do it, you don't just get an idea that this is what you want to do. Don't you have to explain beforehand, before you even act it out, you have to explain to the IRS what your intention is and why it is an efficacious thing to do, and it would only enhance the ability of the organization to succeed at its objectives. That's the first thing. The second thing is, when you get paid $400,000, by the way, I mean, Donald Trump demanded a $1.25 million fee at one point, you may recall. Mm-hmm. But if the people are bringing in that kind of money, exactly how is that money processed within a 501c3?
Well, let me, those are two big questions, and I'll try to answer each of them in turn. On the question of one 501c3 acquiring another one, I'm told, and I believe this is the case, that whether such a transaction is structured properly starts with an examination of the law of the individual jurisdiction where the acquirer and the target are based. So in the case of this Obama Foundation, it was organized in Washington, D.C. Now, I'm not an expert on Washington, D.C. law, and I would venture a guess that, you know, whatever the Barack Obama Foundation wants to do in Washington, D.C., it might get away with doing inside Washington, D.C. So the question of what my brother's keeper is, you know, I haven't seen any evidence that it was a validly organized 501c3 yet, so I don't even know what state it may have been organized in, if it was organized. But let's assume it was validly organized in Washington, D.C. That's just only the first step. You would have to look at the Barack Obama Foundation Articles of Incorporation and demonstrate that the Articles of Incorporation, as drafted, contemplate and allow the Barack Obama Foundation to control the activities of my brother's keeper. And I don't believe it does. That's just my opinion. Beyond that, you would then have to say, all right, the Barack Obama Foundation was created, let's say, I think it was in June, I may have this wrong, but in June of 2014, was the Barack Obama Foundation operated at all times since then through the date of this acquisition in compliance with law? And I would say it doesn't look like it to me. Same question for my brother's keeper. If one or the other were not operated since the date of their formation validly in compliance with applicable state, federal, and if it's foreign laws, then they can't complete the merger. As in legal land, they call that perfecting the merger. They can't get the thing done. So these are knotty questions, and you know that would require professional scrutiny by real experts who are independent, and the trustees would actually, in thinking this through, would have to understand that their first obligation at the Barack Obama Foundation was to protect the valuable franchise of the Barack Obama Foundation, and I don't think they've done their job from what I've seen so far. On the question of structuring payments for speeches, now Barack Obama, like Bill Clinton, in the infancy of each foundation, neither person is a trustee, a named trustee of either foundation. But that doesn't matter. Under the law, the way I read it, and the way lawyers who have been talking to me about this read it, Barack Obama, in the case of his foundation, and Bill Clinton, in the case of his foundation, are each individuals in position to exercise substantial influence over the entity. So they would have to declare to each entity any related party transactions, any benefits they may have gotten through the operation of this charity. And we could say, in the case of Barack Obama, maybe these three speeches, these three $400,000 recent speeches, maybe they have nothing to do with the foundation, okay? Let's assume they have absolutely nothing to do with the foundation. Then he wouldn't have to declare them, or the Barack Obama Foundation wouldn't have to make a declaration in its tax returns that somebody in a position to exercise significant influence over the Barack Obama Foundation got $400,000 for making a one-hour speech. Let's just say in the easy case, from somebody who had nothing to do with the Barack Obama Foundation. But if the Barack Obama Foundation receives a donation from the entity that also has now paid Barack Obama $400,000 for a one-hour speech, then it becomes more and more problematic, which is the issue with the Clinton Foundation. They have never made the appropriate disclosures laying out, you know, this Goldman Sachs over here the Goldman Sachs Foundation made a contribution or engaged in some joint venture with the Clinton Foundation. And by the way, Hillary Clinton received so much money from Goldman Sachs. Bill Clinton received so much money from Goldman Sachs. And if, you know, Chelsea Clinton's husband was a employee of Goldman Sachs, I mean, all that kind of stuff would have to be laid out in the tax filings for the foundation of the Clinton Foundation or of the Barack Obama Foundation. And they haven't done that yet, either one of them.
So you see, there is a repeat happening before our eyes. They're tearing a page out of the worst book on how you run a foundation or any organization. The Clintons have failed spectacularly at running organizations.
Well, and this...
They're no good at it.
Yeah, you know, and
And to think that Barack Obama, you know, presenting this idea that this is a pristine operation, it is not running anything like we expect the old tired Democrats to do. This is, no money is going to pass under the table. Everything is up and above board. They're following the law to the T. But then we see all these parallels. Well, Barack Obama's first line of defense is where he left it, in the IRS. They haven't fired anybody from the IRS. He is being sheltered the way the Clintons have been sheltered for so long. So this is, we did talk the last time, we kind of titled it, you know, the business model. This is their business model.
Yeah. Right. And you know, they also just announced that they're going to hold some kind of Obama Global Summit on Halloween night and I think the following day out there in Chicago. And, you know, as we talked before, there is nothing charitable about holding a meeting closed off to the public where Barack Obama and other powerful members of his political family and perhaps leaders, former and current world leaders, gather together in closed sessions with rich people and investment firms and law firms and media celebrities and others who want to concoct deals in the quiet of the night and day, behind, you know, away from the real investigators. There is nothing charitable about that activity. You can convene meetings, you can charge attendance, you can pay speakers, you can do all that. It's business development. It has nothing to do with charity, and there's no such thing as you know, combining the two. The charity law does not provide for that. If through the operation of a charity, ancillary benefits, as I said, private benefits, collectively are more than $1,000 over the life of the charity, normally the IRS gets really concerned about that and says, wait a minute, you know, you owe us corporate income taxes. You've gotten an illegal benefit. Your donors have making these donations and taking deductions off your federal and state and D.C. and other tax returns. We want that money back with penalties and interest. So this basic idea, the Obama Global Summit, certainly was not contemplated in the Articles of Incorporation. And I don't think it's charitable. So I don't understand why the IRS, I mean, maybe they're rushing to get it done before Koskinen leaves on November 12th, so they'll have a precedent that they can then say, well, you know, you let us happen once, so by not shutting us down the first time, that means we can continue this activity. But that, you know, the way I read the law, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but just when I look at the body of evidence that's out there, this is so far over the line, and it is so surprising to me that you know, that Donald Trump and his incoming team wouldn't, you know, when they're thinking about reforming the tax code, wouldn't seize on this and say, you know, there's a lot, there are trillions of dollars of assets sitting in the tax-exempt land, most of which is run properly and scrupulously. But, you know, we may need to come up with money here to balance the budget if we lower tax rates in the short term. This is a perfect way to do it, to put on notice the large charities that have, you know, decided they're above the law, whether it's Harvard, Yale, and Columbia, or the Clinton Foundation or the Gates Foundation, and say, listen, you know, you're supposed to set an example. You stand in the shoes of government here. It sure looks to us like you've been enormously sloppy over, in the case of the Gates Foundation, now 16 years, giving money to very suspect charities. Why are you doing this? Why, you're smart people, why did you, you know, do this for so long? Same questions for Yale and Harvard and Columbia, who conspire, I would argue, with the Clinton Foundation to give it cover for these nefarious activities. And, you know, there's not a lot of information yet on how much money has actually landed at the Obama Foundation. In 14 and 15, and I think even for most of 16, they probably didn't raise all that much money. But now in 17, as you note, maybe they're raising money at a furious clip. So they shouldn't be engaged, no foundation should be engaged in soliciting contributions across state and national boundaries using the Internet, using telephones, using radio, using the mails, if your paperwork is false and materially misleading. That is, if it contains errors or if it omits crucial facts. That's serious fraud. As we've talked about beforehand, Corinne Brown has already been convicted of federal crimes and awaits sentencing in November for operating an $800,000 alleged slush fund illegally.
Now, she was only a former congresswoman from Florida.
Right, about the same age as Hillary, and, you know, a sitting congressman who'd been in, I think, Congress for over 20 years, running for re-election just as Hillary was, and just around the same time that James Comey said, hey, you know, I'm not going to, we're not going to go after Hillary on the email server issue, just almost to the same day was the day that the U.S. attorney down in Jacksonville brought an indictment. And she was swiftly...
But the Clinton Foundation to this day has not been subjected to a thorough investigation. I want to ask, when a foundation with such notable people, illustrious people, are at the helm raising money, let's say in the same area, the same district, the same... just say the same world that they're raising money in. Let's say that there's another organization that also wants to raise money for something similar. Could that underdog organization make the case that not only are these big hogs doing the wrong thing, you know, this getting all the money because they have all the connections, but they also are beating out smaller organizations that have a record of obeying the law, doing the right thing, and delivering results that are documented?
Absolutely.
In other words, are they really being enabled in running a corrupt organization? A RICO type organization.
Absolutely. I mean, so I remember, you know, the first time I experienced this was when I was getting out of business school in 1980. That was a rough period, even for graduates of top schools. It was tough to get jobs, and I remember thinking, "Wow, it's gonna. Will I ever get a job? Oh, I'm so lucky. I actually got two or three job offers." And you know, so I was looking at life as saying, you know, jobs are scarce. And so then I go into my new employer, my first employer, and recruiting season comes around, and we're sitting around a table saying, how are we ever going to find people to hire? You know, so it depends which side of the table you're on. If you're seeking funds for a charitable cause as a foundation, you may believe that it's very tough to find the money. The reverse actually is the case. In the United States, there is far more money looking for good causes than there are good causes. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Why? We're the richest country in the world, economically speaking. We do spend over $6 trillion a year on government. The fact that's what the figures show, you can disagree about the priorities, but we spend a tremendous amount of money, federal, state, and local government. We have done for decades. The not-for-profit world is gigantic. You know, it's about the not-for-profit world on its own in the United States would be, I think, among the top 10 economies in the world, just our not-for-profit sector. So it's not as if, you know, there are not that many great causes. So when former presidents, as happened recently, for example, I'm glad you brought it up, band together the five former living presidents and create something called fiveformerpresidents.org or something like that, and start raising money for hurricane relief, I don't think that's something that should be encouraged. I think it should be discouraged. There are a large number of highly qualified, and they tend to be more, you know, community-based, maybe faith-based organizations in the afflicted areas that can figure out, you know, what's a real, they've been on the ground forever, they can figure out who's really harmed, who isn't harmed, and they can get the aid directly to the afflicted place better than some new bureaucracy of five former presidents. It sounds wonderful, kumbaya and all that. We are the world. I could just imagine the advertising firms going, you know, crazy, and the celebrities doing the music already on it. That kind of activity, one could argue, diverts money, as happened in Haiti, as happened with Katrina, as happened with a lot of natural disasters, into slush funds where, you know, nobody really knows what happens to the money. And I don't think that's something that the former president, it sounds so wonderful. You know, even I was initially bought it when H.W. and Bill Clinton got together on tsunami back in 2004-05 time frame. You know, I initially thought, hey, that's great. And then, you know, you look at what really happened or may have happened. Nobody really knows actually what happened because there's been no reports on it. But it sure seems to me as if, you know, we're repeating the pattern. And unfortunately, as you point out, Yatrice, there's another big one already flattening Dominica and, you know, blowing what's left of Puerto Rico apart. And who knows what it's going to do to the balance of the Caribbean. So you raise an excellent point.
Well, I want to raise this point, too. I mean, we went all the way down the pike with the Clintons and their most unusual foundation for so many years without any questions being asked and obviously without any oversight. Here comes Barack Obama, and he's got everything going for him. He's highly visible all around the world. He is a pleasant guy, handsome. He can sell ice to Eskimos. He's a very good fundraiser, very efficient. And he has started down this bad road. Is there anything to encourage whichever oversight committee or entity that would pay attention to something like this, since it is so ambitious? It promises to spend $500 million on a building, and that's just the estimate. It probably would be higher than that. And then he has already identified quite a few projects that he intends to personally get involved in, as in raise money for, as part of his commitment to the next generation. Sounds good, just like the Clinton motto of doing good works, whatever the heck that means. Is there a way to stop this ball from rolling?
Well,
until they produce the papers and until they squarely identify what it is they're up to?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I think, you know, on the one hand, we have to get into an area where I'm not really an acknowledged expert, but, you know, I would say that right now what's going on in the Democratic Party is there's a war for the control of the Democratic Party. And the Clintons, you know, even though Barack Obama is the most recent inhabitant of the White House, the Clintons have had a lot longer period of time to cultivate the big moneyed interests in the Democratic Party. And they may well believe that, you know, Hillary has every right to try for 2020, and they may well believe that they can continue to operate this criminal syndicate somehow, defying Donald Trump and whoever he may try to put in to the IRS and ultimately into the Justice Department. So on the one hand, you have the Clintons desperately trying, in my opinion, to cover their tracks and limit their liability. On the other hand, you know, so you put park the Clintons, and let's assume they don't succeed, right? And let's, you know, hopefully assume that, you know, they are singled out, and if they're not put in jail, at least they're forced to give a lot of money back and pay heavy fines and penalties. Then you've got the rest of the Democratic field, and Barack Obama is a young person, relatively speaking. He can't run again, but Michelle could. And, you know, there may be people in the Democratic Party who say, you know what, we see how this foundation model served the Clintons to attract so much money. Let's follow a similar course and build up a war chest so that we can either get Michelle into the White House in 2020 or somebody that the Obamas want and believe could serve their wing of the Democratic Party's interests the best way. So, you know, you have a real, I think, blood sport here between the Obama interests and the Clinton interests. Now, Donald Trump, in theory, does control the executive branch of the the government, and one does wonder what's taking him so long to take control over a very powerful piece of it, that being the IRS, and clean house there and at the Justice Department. But we're sort of in this interregnum period where nothing seems to be happening yet, and the people, the forces of resistance, are able to resist. So if the public, members of the public who are listening to this, particularly those of you who volunteer charities, run them correctly, may donate to charities that are, who care about the charity world, I think the time has come to speak up across the political divide and say, look, nobody stands for charity fraud, and we certainly don't believe that former presidents of this great country should be engaged in charity fraud. So, you know, you contact your representative. I don't know the exact identities of all the different representatives across this country who sit on oversight committees, whether in the Senate or in the House. But if enough people in the public, you know, stand together with one voice and say, you know, we may have differences. Some of us may love socialism and some of us may love capitalism or whatever. But on this one thing, on charity fraud, across the spectrum, we all agree we do not support, we condemn charity fraud because it diverts money from truly needed causes that are not being served effectively enough. And we need to make an example of these people who sat on top of the levers of power in each case for 8 years. I mean, neither the Bill Clinton nor Barack Obama is stupid. They're academically accomplished people. They got reelected in each case. They have good aspects to their records, and they have bad aspects to their records. But they are certainly powerful people who are examples, and we don't want them to be bad examples inside this country and around the world. It's such a vital piece of our economy, I don't think.
And just, again, to go back to the idea of what leadership ought to be, this is the reason that the Democratic Party is in the state that it's in. It has had way too many crooks at the head of the party, and it has permeated throughout the party. So it's a good thing to pay attention, and I'm glad you brought it to our attention so that we will follow this story up. Thanks a lot for being with us today and for the information that you have supplied to us, not only about this particular project, but the other one that we will also update very soon. Thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thank you, Yatrice.
And that brings us to the end of our program. I tell you, it never ends. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crowe. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, @gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See each other tomorrow. Let's try that. Bye-bye.
Money is to blame, but it's only paper. Self put the blame on everything. Money is to blame, but it's only paper. Self put the blame on everything. Money is to blame, but it's only paper. Self put the blame on everything. Money is to blame, but it's only paper.